Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Kaveh Movahed. Election day is behind us, and there were some surprises nationally and in our state. Once again, we're finding after an election that polling missed capturing the sentiments of the majority of American voters. New Mexico's election results were mostly in line with expectations. With a major exception, voters in most counties voted more red than they had in the past, even if not enough to significantly alter the outcomes. Today, we'll discuss the election, from election day for voters and candidates to a look ahead. Ultimately, we'll be talking through what election outcomes in the state and nationally might mean for life in New Mexico. We'll hear from two journalists entrenched in election coverage and a Democratic strategist. But we also want to hear from you. Were the final voting patterns around ethnicity or gender a surprise to you? Are you hopeful or concerned about voting trends or how our state government will operate going forward? How will you or your family's lives be different as a result of the 2024 election? Share your ideas by emailing letstalk@kunm.org or call us at 505-277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. Let's get started with our conversation today. Our first guests this morning are Dan Boyd, the Capitol Bureau Chief for the Albuquerque Journal, and Danny Prokop, who helped coordinate election coverage for Source New Mexico. They both join us remotely by Zoom. Thanks to each of you for being here this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Danny, let's start with the mechanics of the election. There were some real problems this year with same-day registration. Source New Mexico reported that with hours-long delays, some people may have left without voting. Tell us more.
Yeah, absolutely. What we were seeing on election night were long lines in multiple polling places, especially for same-day registration. That's the ability to be able to register or change your party when you're casting your ballot and immediately cast a ballot right after. And what we saw was that turnout for same-day registration was more than 26,000 people. That's the same amount of people on one day who showed up for the whole early voting cycle to update their registration or to register for the first time. And so this overwhelmed the system. What we really learned, though, in the days after the election is that there was also an outage where there was same-day registration wasn't available for a period of about 30 minutes while servers had to be updated because of the demand. That was only really characterized as an outage after the election. Elections officials were telling us that there was a slowness that had been fixed earlier in the day. But what had happened is this bottlenecked same-day voter registration, putting sort of people behind as more and more people then showed up to the polls to same-day register. So what that ended up having was in areas from NMSU to UNM to Chaparral, right, Colonia that straddles Doniana and Otero, were people waiting in line for hours to cast a ballot.
Secretary of State Maggie Toulouse-Oliver spoke to lawmakers yesterday in an interim committee meeting where the system outage came up. Was there a sense that our office knows how to address the challenges that turned up last week?
Well, we're sort of waiting on more answers for what's going to happen. We're anticipating that they're going to ask for more funding for server space, for making sure that they have the computers that are able to sign people up, right, to stop the bottleneck at the top. But election officials are also saying, local county elections officials are saying they're going to have to increase their budgets. They need more staff on the ground, they anticipate, for future elections to ensure that same-day registration goes more smoothly. The other request from county elections officials was that the Secretary of State update the website to make it more user-friendly for both elections officials on either side of same-day registration.
I wonder, did she say anything about why she thought there were so many same-day registrations?
There is generally more turnout on presidential elections than other elections. They're a bigger draw, those national races are a bigger draw for voters. But one of the other things is that same-day voter registration was expanded greatly during the 2023 Voter Rights Act, which it expanded during early voting. But I think that brought more awareness to the idea, and there was more awareness around the idea that you could register to vote before casting your ballot. And that does make it more appealing for first-time voters. It makes it more appealing for people who don't feel like they have time.
Well,
you get registered.
Something else that came up during that committee meeting yesterday, Secretary of State Tulu Solver said she was experiencing threats and harassment after affirming President-elect Donald Trump's national election victory. Do you think, or did you hear about a push for more protections for election workers in upcoming elections?
That's been discussed in previous election bills, and it's being discussed nationally. But I definitely want to pass it over to Dan about the threats. He was there in the meeting.
Okay, Dan Boyd from the Albuquerque Journal. What did you hear?
Yeah, and this kind of came about. The Secretary of State had, after the election, kind of gone on social media, on X, formerly known as Twitter, and kind of tried to address some conspiracies about the election. She said that Donald Trump was the outright winner. And then kind of from there, some people voiced questions, and the Secretary of State eventually said that she felt like it wasn't productive because she was getting some harassment and threats and decided to kind of shut it down. So she brought this up at the legislative interim committee meeting earlier this week, and even kind of said that one legislator had kind of egged on some of those folks, and later confirmed she was talking about a representative from Alamogordo, John Block. And so that led to kind of an interesting exchange. And she kind of said afterward, that she had experienced threats in the past and didn't want it to kind of escalate to that level again, and where she felt unsafe for herself or her family.
Dan, let's talk about some of the races. There were competitions for U.S. Senate seat and all three U.S. House seats. Only one was particularly competitive in southern New Mexico, and we'll spend more time on that next. Was it the candidates or the voters in the races in central and northern New Mexico that made these races fairly safe for the Democratic incumbents?
I mean, I think it's a combination of having incumbents in a lot of those seats, which automatically gives an advantage, and also just the districts. I think looking at those districts, they're fairly safe Democratic seats. The Republicans weren't able to really raise enough money or to tap into some of that maybe national momentum that Republicans had. So I think we know kind of big surprises in those races. We knew that the Democrats, especially in the first congressional district and the third district, were likely to win. And in the Senate race, I think was maybe more competitive with Martin Heinrich and Nella Domenici, but he was still able to kind of maintain a lead in polling all through leading up to Election Day and ended up winning by, I think, around 10 points.
Okay, well, let's transition to what was the most closely watched race in New Mexico, one that drew significant national attention, and that's the U.S. House seat for Southern New Mexico, Congressional District 2. It's flipped back and forth between the parties for years, and the GOP thought they had a good chance of winning it back. What happened, Danny?
Yeah, so this is the first time that CD2 has concurrently voted a Democrat into a second term, and that is Representative Gabe Vasquez. And what happened is that he won by a much more significant margin than was anticipated. He won by 4 points, a little over 9,000 votes, which was significantly different from how this race played out just 2 years ago. His winning margin was only a fraction of a percent the last time. So this showed that the polling, right, which was showing this race to be extremely close, it was always within the margin of error, really couldn't tell us how people were going to vote. But what happened was that this is a pretty overwhelming vote in for, at least in this district, right? 9,000 votes is very significant and in voting in Vasquez. And Harrell, who had been running for the seat and who had previously represented this district, did concede on election night when the unofficial results came out.
You know, we've heard the word polling several times already this hour, and I think we're going to get more into that a bit later. But right now, Dan, how complex was this result? Was there more to it than the recent Democratic redistricting that was kind of put in place to give them the edge?
I mean, I think redistricting played a significant role. This is the second election cycle kind of with these new district boundaries. And now CD2 goes up into South Valley and Albuquerque, obviously Las Cruces, and had lost some of the areas in southeast New Mexico, parts of Hobbs that used to be in the district. So I think we ended up seeing that Gabe Vasquez was able to win by a big enough vote margin in Bernalillo County and in Doñana County that it made it, it made the map really difficult for Yvette Harrell to try and kind of find a path to victory if she couldn't keep the margins close in those races. And, I think we maybe thought he had a slight edge going in based on some of the polls. And I will say, I think some of the polls have been off in the cycle, but The polls that Brian Sandoroff did for the Journal, you know, ended up being fairly close in a lot of these races, including CD2. So I think we thought he might have the edge going in, but you never know with turnout and momentum and then President-elect Trump's visit to Albuquerque the week before the election. So obviously a lot of factors, you know, in play in the final days before Election Day.
Okay, well, this is a good time to introduce our next guest, Sisto Abeda, a longtime Democratic strategist, now with Tri Strategies New Mexico, is in the studio with me. Good morning, Sisto. Good
morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'd like to get your take on this. Democrats were able to hold CD2 for a second consecutive term, and they won with a bigger margin than last time. How? How did they do it?
You know, Dan is exactly right. Redistricting had a huge role to play in this election, simply because 25% of the entire vote comes out of Doniana County, the other 25% comes out of Bernalillo County, and then the rest is checkered amongst the other counties in the district. You know, the interesting part is there's about 15 counties that are either fully or partially in that congressional district, and Gabe Vasquez was only able to win six, but he won the six that had the most population. So he wins Bernalillo County, Doniana, Grant, McKinley, Socorro, and Cibola. And, you know, he kind of blew the doors off in McKinley County, getting 77% of the entire vote there, which really gave him that extra margin that he needed to make this a very competitive race.
Well, as Dan mentioned, Donald Trump stopped in Albuquerque just a few days before the election. How big a factor was that in the CD2 race?
Well, you know, from what we're looking at in the numbers, we're starting to see that it really only affected the Albuquerque Metro. So you saw numbers get closer where Barack Obama did extremely well in counties like Sandoval. Kamala Harris was only able to carry that by 51% this time around. But the more interesting part is that he won Cibola County, which is kind of that, and also a part of that is in this district. So his impact was really towards trying to mobilize the Albuquerque metro area Republicans to get out and have a bigger push, and more particularly the outlying more rural areas of the Albuquerque metro.
Danny, I wonder if you've heard in southern New Mexico if Trump's visit did anything to boost Republican turnout or Democratic or any turnout for that matter.
I'm not really sure if I can correlate those things, but I can tell you that there were races in the state house down ballot that were more close than anticipated, in particularly Doniana County. There was a challenge for Senator Kerry Hamblin's seat by Samantha Barncastle-Salopek. There was a challenge for the for Representative Nathan Small, who, of course, is sitting at the top of the finance seat on House Appropriations. And he was facing a challenger, Republican Kim Skaggs, who is a party member down here. So there were races that were close. And then there was one that was particularly close, which was House District 53, which incorporates parts of Doniana County and portions of Chaparral. And that was eventually awarded to Sarah Silva, a first-time community organizer who's ran here, but she faced a very tight race with Republican Elizabeth Winter Road. So there were some down ballot seats that were particularly competitive that I don't know if people were expecting them to be.
Okay, I'm about to transition into something a little bigger, but before we do that, let's take a quick break. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Kaveh Movahed. We're taking your calls about the election's effects on New Mexico. Call us at 505-277-5866. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the New Mexico Local News Symposium, taking place in Santa Fe on November 15th. Speakers include Brian Stelter from CNN and Jessica Gadate from KRQE. More information at nmlocalnews.org.
Support comes from James Carinchin Public Relations, specializing in strategic communications and reputation brand management. JKPR helps local, national, and international companies navigate through changing business climates. More at jamescarinchin.com.
Trinidad is the home of the steel drum, or the steel pan, as it's called locally. Every year at Carnival, Trinidad hosts Panorama, a showcase for the best steel pan ensembles. Composer and pianist Stuart Goodyear plays his take on Panorama on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Kaveh Movahed. Today, we're talking about last week's elections. You can email comments to letstalk@kunm.org or give us a ring at 505-277-5866. Right now, we have Danny Prokop from Source New Mexico, Dan Boyd from the Albuquerque Journal, and Sisto Abeda, the Democratic strategist from Tri-Strategies with us.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sisto.
No problem.
Sisto, how is it that the southern region of our state is often characterized as conservative or maybe purple, but Gay Vasquez could pull out a win for Democrats even while there was a bigger shift to Trump in that region?
Well, you know, you really have to give it to Gabe and his campaign team. They really had a issues-driven campaign. They listened to the constituents and the voters in the district and really drove a message surrounding the bigger issues that we've been hearing a lot of folks talking about over the last couple of weeks, particularly around crime and around the economy. It was very interesting to watch in that race how many of these counties that were solidly blue actually came out with, you know, pretty large numbers to help him get over that hump. The Republicans, on the other hand, they basically underperformed in those counties where Trump won and where they needed to win. Even though there was a huge push, and we talked about that a little bit early on same-day voter registration, we're seeing a lot of Republicans registering to vote that day. And so that, I think that it came down to, in that district, a better ground game on Election Day. I think walking into Election Day, Gabe had a comfortable lead, but he just was able to maintain it throughout the entire day.
Did he have to break from traditional party principles to kind of...
Not as much as you would have seen that you saw, say, in the Xochitl Torres small race when she lost to Yvette Harrell. You saw much more of a shift, but that district was completely different. The big inclusion of the factor here is Bernalillo County is now the South Valley and part of the west side of Albuquerque are a part of that district. So you're going to have much more... upper middle class individuals, some working class folks in that area, folks that are a little bit more college educated, showing up to vote in that population, which really was one of the factors that helped Gabe overcome that challenge.
Okay, we have an email from listener John who says, as long as we continue to vote for Democrats, then we should expect to be last in education, economy, income, job growth, etc., and first in crime, drugs, childhood poverty, etc. And now that the national elections are over, we'll see that we have chosen poorly. Our House and Senate representatives are now powerless and will not do anything to improve the lives of New Mexicans. Thanks for writing, John. Dan, I'm going to go to you with this. Is it accurate to say that being in the minority party in both houses of Congress, that our federal legislators will be powerless to help New Mexicans?
You know, I think certainly for Martin Heinrich and Ben Ray Lujan, it's going to be a challenge for them being in the minority party, especially now that it appears that Republicans will control the House, the Senate, and obviously the White House as well. And I think that will shift a little bit. But I think they both, you know, been around D.C. for long enough that obviously we'll still be able to play a key role in securing funding for New Mexico's national labs, things like that. So I wouldn't say they're powerless. I do think it changes the equation a little bit, and they're going to maybe have to play a little more defense and not be able to advance their agenda as much as they might be able to do if they were in the majority. But I think that'll be something we're watching. I mean, New Mexico now in a position with an all Democratic delegation in D.C., in a country, you know, controlled by Trump administration and an all Republican House and Senate. So that'll be it'll be a different dynamic for the state.
OK, Dan, let's turn to the state house for a few minutes. All of the seats were up for election. Were there any surprises?
You know, I know Danny mentioned a few races down in southern New Mexico that were close. In the end, you know, Republicans picked up one seat in the state house, and that's Rebecca Dow, who previously a state legislator kind of winning election to again after not running 2 years ago. So, you know, largely status quo. There's only one incumbent in the House who lost, and that was in that race, Tara Jaramillo of Socorro, who lost to Rebecca Dow. In the Senate as well, you know, only Republicans picked up one seat. So Democrats will still have a pretty strong majority in both chambers. That said, I think there's going to be a lot of new faces come January and at the legislature. And also for the first time, it'll be a majority of female legislators, which I think will be an interesting dynamic. We've seen that trend in recent years, but now to actually have a majority and how that kind of translates into policy will be something we're keeping an eye on.
Yeah, Danny, I want your take on this. How might that affect legislative priorities or how work's done in the roundhouse? Or whatever else it was you were about to add. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I actually think there was something surprising from this election, okay. And it's something that we watched in the primary, and it carried over into the general, but there were a lot of uncontested races in the state's legislature this year. Like, more than half in both chambers were uncontested. So I did find that to be interesting because I want to hear from people about, like, why they're maybe not interested in running for state politics, or if there is some sort of— a lot of these were very powerful incumbents and in positions of authority in the legislature. So I'm just sort of curious to hear from folks if they're— why they're not running to participate in their state government, because more than half in both chambers seems kind of surprising to us. So for a lot of folks, they didn't have a choice on down ballots on election day to get more representation. Moving over into a majority of women now in the roundhouse, I'm very curious to see— this puts us in a pretty small minority in national politics of a majority women legislature, and certainly doesn't reflect, for example, we know that Congress is very much, very man heavy. And I wish I could phrase that better, but it's not coming to me. But we're seeing, like, I'm not sure how it's going to change politics or how it's going to change governance, but I am very curious to watch how that plays out this year.
Okay, Sista, you had something to add.
And to that point, Danny's absolutely right. We've elected a majority of women, but we've been seeing that trend in New Mexico politics. The majority of our executive right now are women. The majority of our state Supreme Court are women. So in all three branches, pretty much right now, women are in charge here in New Mexico, which is a great thing for diversity and everything else. But also an interesting point on the Republican side of the game, the Republicans have elected 11 Hispanics to the state legislature, the most number of Hispanics than ever before. The last time they had that was when they took back the majority, and I think there were 6, but now they're at a full number of 11.
Okay, well, what other sorts of implications, I wonder, are there on having a majority female legislature when it comes to voters and voting?
Well, I think that right now in New Mexico, what we saw, the majority of our voters are actually women, that are turning out to the polls. And in some of these districts, but also to Danny's point, there weren't a lot of contested general elections where the majority of all the voters got a chance to vote. So that's something that we're going to have to start taking a look at is that primary in general elections, we have independent voters that are able to vote. And in the primary, they're closed primaries to some extent. We have a form of an open primary system where anybody can walk in, change their voter registration to declare a party on that day, vote in either one of those two elections, and then come back out, change their voter registration right back to where they were before if they chose to, but they do have to declare a party. So it's not a completely open primary, but it's somewhat of one. So I think that, with the female factors, we've had a lot of organizations that have been out there working really hard to get women elected in New Mexico. So much to the extent is that you're starting to see that play out on both a local and a national level.
You told me that having a larger female population in the legislature also, though, has effects on male voters.
Yes. Well, we've started to see some of that trend where certain organizations are starting to target either Hispanic male voters or Hispanic male candidates or male candidates overall. And so a lot of that was happening in the primary. And if you look at where women made the most gains was in their respective primaries. So that also played over into what we saw with male voting overall in some of the races that were closer than what we thought they were going to be.
We talked about professionalization of the legislature in the past. You've said that it wouldn't make much difference to elections, but that campaign finance is already very professionalized in New Mexico. Tell us more about that.
Well, it's the dirty little secret of my colleagues is that, you know, right now, if you look at most of the, and I think that Dan and some other groups have kind of looked at campaign finance reporting, where you're starting to see the professionalism of campaigns. When I first started in 1998, a lot of our campaigns were run amongst family members, friends, at a kitchen table with scraping up, you know, a couple hundred bucks to run. Now, the number one question that you hear most candidates ask by organizations that endorse or support them is, who's running your campaign? And that's become the bigger factor. Those individuals are doing very well in this process of elections, and we're starting to see those numbers climb pretty high.
You know, my news director likes to remind us reporters that we should always follow the money. Where was the money being spent this year?
According to the Secretary of State's website, if you take a look at it, it was spent on consultants. So, you know, we have become a very important factor in elections. We are the ones who craft the messaging. We're the ones who read the tea leaves, some might say. Some of us do it better than others. But at the same time, it's that institutional knowledge that is now being passed through the election professional class rather than through the elected class.
Dan, there was only a small shift between parties in the State House, I think. You know, you said one House seat, one Senate seat. It's only been a week, but do you have a sense of whether Democrats are worried about these kinds of changes, even subtle shifts?
You know, I do think I did a story earlier this week already. Senate Democrats say they're working on a crime package for the upcoming session, which, you know, they likely would have done anyways, regardless of the election results. But I do think these national election results, I think, might spur a little bit of action and kind of some policy discussions in Santa Fe. I mean, obviously, with the governor, I think one dynamic we were watching is if Kamala Harris won, you know, the chance that maybe Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham might have been appointed to a position. Obviously, that's not going to happen now. So I think we know that she's going to be around for the final 2 years of her term, and kind of that dynamic of how she works with, you know, leaders of her own party, but who she really has butted heads with this year over crime, especially during the special session. So I think the next 2 months, now that we're kind of shifting our focus to the legislative session, we'll kind of see whether there is some common ground on some of these issues, and you know, what issues Republicans focus on, and whether there's kind of, you know, a change of course a little bit from Democratic leadership as far as the reception on some of these crime bills.
Sisto, would you say Democrats should be worried?
You know, what we're seeing across the board is it's an ideological shift. It's whether you're a progressive, a moderate, or a conservative. In this election, we saw that 94% of all Democrats thought that they were progressive, 2% felt that they were conservative. On the Republican side, 1% felt that they were progressive, while 96% thought that they were conservative. But the interesting part of the people in the middle, it's our independents. 42% see themselves as progressive, 35% see them as conservative, and the rest are falling in the middle somewhere. So when you're talking about the legislature's got to represent everybody in the state of New Mexico. So taking in all of those factors, it's going to be an ideological battle. It's going to be a thought of what ideas are the best that are put forward. And I think that, you know, Dan's done a great job of reporting on some of the proposals that is specifically in the crime, because you have so many Democrats that come from rural areas that actually do have a different view of crime than, you know, we've heard so many times in some of the Dan's reporting and some of the other outlets reporting is that a lot of the Democrats that live outside of the metro areas are saying, well, it's a metro problem, not a countywide problem.
Okay. I see that we just had a new guest join us. I'd like to add one more voice to the conversation today. On Zoom this morning is UNM political science professor and executive director of the UNM Center for Social Policy, Gabe Sanchez. Thanks for joining us this morning, Professor Sanchez.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thanks for having me. Looks like you've got a true all-star panel here talking New Mexico politics, so I appreciate being included.
It's a fun conversation so far, and we're glad to have you. I'm wondering, Southern New Mexico is where the bulk of our conversation this morning has been so far, and a lot of the national attention leading up to the election. Is that where most of attention in the future will be in New Mexico when it comes to the national and even state level politics?
I think absolutely in terms of national politics, and that's been, you know, the common theme in New Mexico politics over the last several election cycles. But as the other two congressional districts become increasingly safe for Democrats, especially post-redistricting, all the action is going to be in CD2. And in fact, you know, even though President Trump made gains in New Mexico this election cycle, I don't really see a whole lot that's actually shifted in terms of ideology and other things. It seems to me like it's just a question of the Trump effect, so to speak. And particularly in southeastern New Mexico, I mean, one of the things that I noted over time in southeastern New Mexico is that's where you've seen the biggest swings in turnout among New Mexican voters when Trump is or is not on the ballot. And so I think it's hard to really take a look at what we saw in this election cycle and project what things will look like in the future when you don't have presidential nominee Trump at the top of the ticket.
Well, I guess I was about to ask, is New Mexico going purple? But I have a feeling you're saying no then.
Well, a lot will hinge on how things play out over the next 2 years. I mean, my short answer in terms of what we saw this election cycle nationally and in New Mexico was the significant impact of the economy on the minds of voters and the inability for Democrats nationally and here in New Mexico to come up with strong ideas that persuaded the voting population that they were the party to trust on fixing the economy. And if you look at probably the question I've been asked the most over the last week has been, what about Hispanic male voters? And given that the Hispanic population, right, this is the only state where we talk about them being the majority racial and ethnic group of the electorate, shifts among Hispanic males, right, almost half of that demographic in New Mexico is going to be huge. And I think that was a big part of the story. My analysis of what drove Hispanic males was all about the economy. Their perception that, look, we have to remind ourselves during the COVID era, right, when you saw President Trump essentially say, we'll put the economy over everything else, we shouldn't be closing down businesses. Let's remind ourselves that overall in here in New Mexico, Hispanic male workers are overrepresented among construction industry, which was hit huge by that. So if you just think about it real plainly, right, a lot of those Hispanic male voters were looking at a range of issues, but at the end of the day saying, I remember losing my business during COVID. We still haven't recovered from that. I remember my family losing their job as a result of it. So I think a lot of the future in New Mexico will largely depend on whether or not Republicans in the next 2 years make headway on inflation, jobs, cost of housing, all the things that voters, especially Hispanic voters, were screaming were their priority. If that happens, I think Democrats have a lot to worry about here in New Mexico and everywhere else. But if that doesn't, with Republicans having full federal control of the House, the Senate, the presidency, Supreme Court, I think it'll be very difficult for them to be able to maintain, you know, the positive impact they've had among Hispanic voters and all the other subgroups that shifted Republicans' way this cycle.
Now, Sisto, you've pointed out that among state House Republicans, more of them are Hispanic than ever before. How should we understand that shift?
Well, I mean, it kind of dovetails into what Gabe is talking about here is that there was a definite shift. The Republican Party, I don't think that they intentionally did this. I think that there was talking with people inside of that group is they're saying that, you know, some of these Hispanic Republicans that just showed up and ran themselves and were able to build coalitions in their community are starting to assert themselves more in the Republican Party as well. And I think that was an intentional effort on their behalf. But at the same time, what we're starting to see is, Professor Sanchez is exactly right, is that what we're seeing in southern New Mexico particularly is that a lot of these folks that are in construction industry type of jobs are definitely felt the crunch of this economy. And, you know, specifically because in Hispanic populations, I mean, you know, Hispanic men are mostly sometimes the breadwinners in most of these families. And they're really coming home and saying, you know, I'm having to make a choice between getting my kids, you know, food on the table or the brand new soccer shoes that he needs to play soccer this summer.
Gabe, Professor Sanchez, I'm wondering, is our state's experience of this political shift mirroring national trends?
I think, yes, in many regards, we are mirroring national trends. I think, you know, the potential of Hispanic voters in New Mexico, you know, 40% or even higher voting for Trump is, you know, consistent with what we've seen across the country. So in many ways, I do think that we mirror some of those aspects. But at the same time, you know, New Mexico and Colorado, you know, are the two states that really didn't see across the full ballot a huge Republican dominance like we saw in many other places across the country. So I would say, yes, some of those forces, and especially if we think about the Hispanic vote, I mean, I think those things are trending with what I'm seeing in other places. But I think we're always going to have our little bit of a unique nuance to that. And I think CD2 is a good example of that. You know, when you've got an area where, you know, I often refer to this as the Trump bump, right? The positive effect, primarily not so much in movement of voters his direction, but turnout based on enthusiasm among his voting base. That's a real effect. And we've seen that over and over again. And then the fact that where you would most likely see that having a pronounced impact is in the congressional district where Democrats actually improve their performance relative to 2022 just tells us there's obviously going to be unique nuances to the New Mexico population that we're not seeing elsewhere.
Okay, we just have a minute right now before we have to pause, but Sisto, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, and just something else that we're noticing nationally is that national Latinos are starting to look more like New Mexicans, where now you're seeing a generational shift. A lot of the strategies that was happening amongst the parties was going after those first and second generation immigrant population. Now you're dealing with third, fourth, fifth generation nationally, where here in New Mexico, you've got fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth generation. So the rest of the nation is starting to kind of look more like New Mexico.
All right. Thank you. Nice perspective. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Kaveh Movahed. Stay right there. We'll be back in just a minute.
November is the perfect time to donate that unwanted vehicle before the holiday and year-end rush. In fact, this is the best time to do it, while we still have time to tow it away, sell it, and get everything taken care of before the end of the year. We will handle all the paperwork and pickup. It just takes one phone call to 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227. Or visit KUNM.org to get started today.
Plants of the Southwest supports KUNM, offering native and drought-tolerant plants and seeds for over 45 years. In Santa Fe at 3095 Agua Fria and in Albuquerque on 4th Street, two blocks north of Osuna. PlantsoftheSouthwest.com.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, a conversation with Mexican actors Diego Luna and Gael Garcia Bernal.
I know friendship. I know what that is. But what I have with Gael is something else. What we have is called more like the your chosen family.
That's next time on Latino USA.
That's Latino USA, Monday mornings at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Kaveh Movahed. Do you feel like the New Mexico Democrats have a safe hold on local politics? Or are we trending purple? Tell us why or why not by calling 505-277-5866, or you can email letstalk@kunm.org. We have with us in the studio Sisto Abeda, the Democratic strategist, and joining by Zoom, Danny Prokop from Source New Mexico, Dan Boyd from the Albuquerque Journal, and Gabe Sanchez, the executive director of the Center for Social Policy. Professor Sanchez, did Democrats' reliance on campaigning on abortion access contribute to voters or Hispanic voters in particular moving towards conservative candidates?
That's a great question, and one that I'm unpacking as we speak, looking at some of our national polling data to get a sense of what moved Hispanic voters. I think the context of reproductive health care rights and some other progressive policy issue areas, I think if they did have an impact in terms of an over-reliance on the Democratic side, it's essentially the fact that that conversation has been ongoing since before the 2022 election cycle. And I heard a lot in focus groups this cycle among men of color, not just Hispanic men, but men of color, men even more broadly than that, that they sometimes feel left out of the political discussion when there's so much emphasis on issues that, and let's make this really clear, that they support and they care about. But at the end of the day, they're prioritizing the economy and making sure they can afford, you know, groceries at the end of the day. And I think part of that context is we have to remind ourselves the Hispanic vote nationally and here in New Mexico was huge in 2022. Remember, everybody thought the bottom was going to drop out of Democrats in 2022. We were expecting a huge Republican wave. Remember all of this, right? None of that transpired largely because Hispanics outperformed all the modeling in terms of Democratic vote share. So I think a lot of those, you know, men voters said, hey, awesome, we went to the polls, we're screaming loudly the economy. And then for 2 years, they didn't see any action on that from Democrats. And I think that was a big part of the story. So I don't think it's so much relying exclusively on abortion, reproductive health care. It's just not recognizing the obvious to me that every poll was saying all voters are screaming the economy. And I think Democrats never really prioritized that in their outreach and their messaging. And so I would not say it's like the over-reliance on abortion. If that wasn't there, to be honest, the situation might have been even worse for Democrats than what we saw.
Danny, I want to come back to you because I'm still trying to grapple with how Gabe Vasquez won a bigger majority in Congressional District 2 while Trump also won a bigger majority. Did Vasquez spend a lot of time with messaging on abortion, or did he focus more on economy or energy or things we would think of as important to the region?
He did spend a lot of time on abortion, but I think that one of the key things here is that Vasquez, when he was talking about how he talks with voters, is that I think that he doesn't divorce abortion care and these things from the economy, right? Like women being able to join the workforce, right, or caring about these sorts of things is an economy story in New Mexico. And honestly, like, abortion care is very important for much of Southern New Mexico, whether it's from the desert, right, that Gabe Vasquez is very like loud about, is the desert of all kinds of medical care, whether that's reproductive access or not. But also the fact that like this is a portion of much of Texas is coming to New Mexico, right, to seek reproductive health care. And like that's a reality down here. And so I think that there were multiple things that we saw from messaging, but I think partially and importantly, like Vasquez was very able to translate a lot of these issues as an economy issue.
Sisto, I'm wondering, would you urge Democrats to continue to campaign on this issue kind of so vigorously?
Well, just to share a little secret of the sauce with my clients, in January and February, we're telling them everything has to do exactly what Danny said, is pivot back into the economy. So we can talk about all the other issues, but if we can't talk about how they're going to make an economic impact and very easily articulate that to people who the economy is hurting them the most, they're not going to be very effective. One of the things that Democrats have to be very careful of here in New Mexico is that New Mexico is going to have a huge surplus of funding here at the state level. We're looking, I think, at over $500 million in extra revenue. What we do with that $500 million to help stimulate the economy and get those dollars back into people's pockets is going to, set the stage for the upcoming gubernatorial election.
Okay, we have a caller on the line, Loretta from Rio Rancho. Loretta, thanks for calling in. Go ahead. Okay, I'm not sure if Loretta's with us. Can you hear me? Okay, give us a try again. We're going to move on. Sisto, have Democrats moved too far to the left by, you know, maybe not speaking about the economy and instead focusing on more, you know, so-called progressive issues?
I think that both parties have swung to the far extremes of both of their sides, and they're kind of sitting squarely in other corners. But at the same time, I think that here in New Mexico, because we still do have a number of what people term as moderate Democrats and moderate Republicans, those are going to be the people that we're going to want to watch here in New Mexico in the state legislature, to see them bringing people together to have a different point of view and to come out with the best outcomes for New Mexicans.
Gabe Sanchez, what did Republicans do right in this election?
You know, they did quite a bit right? Obviously, in terms of the outcomes that we've seen. I think probably the biggest thing that they did was focus on the issues that the voters were saying they cared most about. And I don't think it was necessarily that they had strong plans for the economy that they marketed hard to voters. I think they just started the conversation by recognizing the economy is struggling. We're going to do something about fixing it. Where on the flip side of that, you know, most of the conversation that Democrats were pumping out to voters was, hey, the economy is really not that bad. Trends are improving. Let's look at all these indicators, you know, and in essence, I think what that did is it put a lot of potential Democratic voters in a place where they're saying, wait a minute, that's not how I feel in my home. I can't afford groceries. I can't afford rent. And I think that disconnect, I think, made it much easier for Republicans to move to conversations about other public policy areas, because at the end of the day, it felt to a lot of voters that were on the fence that Republicans are listening to us. So I think that was a big part of the story. You know, my strong advice to be, frank with Democrats out there, you know, start the conversation by listening. let's maybe not try to scream at voters so much about why things are actually great. Let's have Democrats pause for a moment, listen closely to what some of the demographic subgroups that didn't trend as hard their way have to say and what they think about the priorities in the next couple of years.
Okay, we got a summary of Loretta's call. Loretta didn't, we couldn't hear her when she called a moment ago. And what she said was Trump didn't build a good economy. Obama did that. The reason prices are so high is because companies are gouging them. We can't deport aliens because then, that's in quotes, because then prices are going to go up even more. There's a lot there. Some of it is that disconnect you were talking about. Some of it is also pointing to President-elect Trump's plan for mass deportations. He says on day one, boy, I don't know who to go to with this. Let's start with Gabe Sanchez. What's that going to do potentially to the price of groceries and what we feel in our pocketbooks?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I appreciate being able to speak a little bit about immigration policy, because that's the other big driver that definitely had an impact on the Hispanic vote this cycle here in New Mexico, as well as everywhere else across the country. And I think, you know, most reporters that I've talked to about the prospect of mass deportation, the way I framed it is, at the end of the day, the cost of goods are going to significantly increase for consumers, right? Across the board, you know, you think about grocery prices, right? Everybody knows, no economist going to tell you otherwise, that if you remove the undocumented worker population from the agricultural industry, the only option for a lot of those businesses is to try to find U.S. workers to replace that. And you're going to have to pay them higher wages with a lot more benefits to do that. And we've already seen that happen in the past, right? So that's going to make those goods cost a lot more. The other is construction industry. I think that's a big thing here in New Mexico that we want to pay attention to. But even industries that we don't often think about having a heavy undocumented or immigrant, let's say immigrant overall, because a lot of mixed status families are going to be impacted by what's coming ahead in terms of immigration policy. And a lot of those industries, even including oil and gas, which I've been educated on, has a much higher percentage of Hispanic and immigrant workforce than I was even aware of. All of those industries are going to be impacted if, you know, President nominee Trump is successful in being able to implement, mass deportation here in New Mexico, in a state where you don't anticipate our Democratic leadership playing ball and really essentially helping the Trump administration influence that.
I'm wondering, why has the nasty rhetoric about immigrants seemingly either started to take hold with or maybe not been a deal breaker for so many voters of color?
I'll jump on that one, because I think it's important to remind voters out there, this notion of demonizing immigrants or blaming them from economic issues, that goes back as long as we have any information about elections in the United States. Every time in U.S. history the economy is struggling, guess who gets the blame? Immigrants do. And that goes back to whether we were talking about Italian and Irish immigrants in one generation, to Asian American immigrants in another. Now we're talking about a different demographic group of immigrants, but it's the same story, right? We heard loud messaging from Republicans. Immigrants are the blame for why you can't get affordable housing. Immigrants are who to blame for why you can't get a good paying job. And guess what? After time and time again of hearing those messages, you start to believe it. And we saw a lot of evidence that Hispanic voters, like everybody else across the country, would tell you, yeah, I believe that's the cause of some of our economic challenges, the immigrant population. So I think that's the context we have to operate in, is this is not unique to the 2024 election cycle. This, unfortunately, has been the playbook. And in some cases, both parties essentially, you know, making immigrants the scapegoat. And I think that was essentially what we saw in the context of immigration this cycle.
Okay. Sisto, let's shift just a little bit with our last few minutes. Donald Trump has talked about massive cuts to government and government spending. The Urban Institute says that more than 30% of New Mexico state revenue comes from federal funding. Should New Mexicans be worried?
I have a very hard time believing that we're going to have to worry about some of the federal spending that's happening here in New Mexico, simply because of the nature of spending that's happening here. Sandia National Labs, Los Alamos National Labs, our two biggest research facilities who handle most of our nuclear armaments in the country, something that I'm sure that President-elect Trump is very excited about, having those nuclear armaments. But at the same time, where we would see a definite look is going to be at some of the places that have already been on the chopping block, and those are some of our Air Force bases, particularly Cannon. We'll be having to create a strong coalition, and that's going to be a heavy lift for somebody like Gabe Vasquez down in southern New Mexico.
Okay, we have an email from listener Shauna, who says, I do not understand how the New Mexicans in Santa Fe and Albuquerque think. They want to get rid of the oil fields and have a Democratic president. Do they understand that the oil fields and we in the southern part of the state are who supplies all the tax money to keep our state going and pays for everything that gets done with tax dollars in their cities? To get rid of the oil fields would have an absolute devastating effect on our whole state. Dan? Shauna does make a good point about our state's reliance on oil and gas revenue. Is there a disconnect there, or have Democrats maybe made a devil's bargain?
Well, I think, speaking as a Santa Fe resident, I mean, I think it's clear that a lot of these programs that have been enacted at the state level in recent years have been reliant on that oil funding. And, you know, we'd kind of even done a little review, and it certainly continued the last 4 years. The state's oil production and revenue numbers have gone up under Joe Biden, just like they did under Donald Trump. So I do think, you know, that's, and the governor and top Democrats recognize that right now it's not realistic. There's no other industry that could replace oil and gas when it comes to revenue at a state level. I mean, there's certainly good attempts at trying to diversify the economy, but there's nothing that can take the place of that. So I think that's why you've seen at the Roundhouse some proposals to pause fracking or things like that have not been successful. Just realizing that, you know, when it comes to bottom lines, yeah, I mean, oil is such a huge part of the state's revenue mix.
Danny, oil and gas, you know, might benefit from Donald Trump's proposed policies. Would that help Republicans retake Southern New Mexico CD2 in 2 years?
I'm not sure how that would exactly play out because so oil and gas executives are very excited about a Donald Trump presidency. On recent calls and shareholder calls, these sort of public statements about an excitement about a Trump presidency and Trump's promise to drill, baby, drill. Of course, one of the issues is that while, yes, of course, it is building the majority of the budget and most of our state money is coming from oil and gas, we're also paying a price climatically. New Mexico is on the knife's edge of climate change. We're in one of the fastest changing areas in the contingent United States. We're seeing floods and fires, which are exacerbated by climate change. These events are directly linked to the heating of the world, which is being fueled by the production and burning of fossil fuels. And that is one of the problems that New Mexico is continually facing. We make our money off of oil and gas, and it is also harming and killing our population through these changes, these global changes that we're seeing.
I wonder what we should be looking forward to when it comes to environmental policy with a Trump administration, a second Trump administration, and how that could affect New Mexico. Also knowing, though, that we have, you know, a fairly strong state government and good watchdogs there. Dan Boyd, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think there will be more environmental proposals brought forward. And already there's been some rules about emissions, things like that. I do think, you know, the state, as Danny kind of mentioned, is walking a balancing act a little bit, you know, trying to pass some of these environmental safeguards while at the same time, you know, really being reliant on this oil revenue and using that in a lot of ways to try to pass some of these tax cuts or things like that that could help the state's economy, people who are dealing with those kind of issues. So it's a little bit of a delicate dance, you know, but I think the state's been doing it for a while, and I'm not sure they've figured it all out, but I think we'll see more of that going forward.
Caller Don from Albuquerque couldn't stay on the line, but said, when voters in Germany chose Hitler, did they imagine the hell their nation would cause and suffer? Will anyone hold Donald Trump accountable? Professor Sanchez, we have about 30 seconds. You want to give it a shot?
Yeah, I'll say first, in terms of the implications for voters, one really important factor that we need to note is a wide segment of voters in this cycle were so young, they didn't participate in either the 2020 or 2016. One of five Hispanic voters that cast a ballot, this is their first election. So it's important to note that a lot of these folks don't remember 2016 to 2020 when the rest of us saw directly the implications of what a Trump administration would look like. So on the voting side, that's what it looks like. In terms of accountability, wow, that's everybody that I've talked to says essentially there's not going to be a whole lot of accountability. Right? I think Republicans have essentially a lot of control, Supreme Court oversight, everything is trending in their favor to not have a ton of oversight. But we do have federalism, so New Mexicans know that we'll have Democratic leadership here within the state.
Okay, I'm sorry to say we've reached the end of the hour. Thanks to everyone who called or emailed, and a big thank you to our guests, Sisto Abeda, Daniel Prokop, Gabe Sanchez, and Dan Boyd. We'll have audio from today's show up on our website soon. You can also get the Let's Talk New Mexico podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Our engineer today is Marino Spencer. Mia Casas handled the phones, and Megan Kamrick produced the show this week. I'm Kaveh Movahed for Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.